This week on the BOAG World Show, we talk about simplifying your workflow and better understanding the role of the Net Promoter Score. This week's show is sponsored by Teacup AdWords and Full Story. Hello and welcome to BOAGworld.com, the podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul BOAG, and returning from his foreign travels is cheapskate, miserable ass, Marcus Lillington.
What have I done now?
Well, I mean, honestly, mate, you're an embarrassment to me. I get this, dear listener, I'm talking to the listener now, not you, Marcus. I get this Skype call earlier. Going, you know how you're speaking in Barcelona?
Right, yeah. Well, you kind of said you might be able to do something. So I'm just, you know, was that the wrong thing to do? Or was I just supposed to go, yeah, Paul?
Well, it's not. So listener, what we're talking about here is that I'm speaking at Smashing Conference in Barcelona, which looks like it's going to be incredible. I cannot wait. Really good lineup, except for me, obviously. And really great set of workshops, except for me, obviously. And I got really excited about it. So I shared this with Marcus and Chris, and they said, oh, yeah, that looks really good. But they're too tight to pay the full price. So I've had to go back to Smashing and say, do you mind, Mr. Smashing Magazine Man, if you give us discounts for my friends? Tight ass.
Well, you know, if you don't ask and all that, you don't get, do you, in life?
I suppose they're getting some promotional stuff on BOAG World, on the podcast as a result, simply because I'm taking the piss out of you for being tight.
I'll return the favour one day. Don't know how, and I could ever do that. But you know, one day.
Well, you just need to start a career in speaking at conferences, Marcus. That's the only thing for it.
Yeah. Well, obviously, if you do come through, Paul, I'll be looking forward to that too. It'll be my second trip to Spain this year. Just come back from where you've been.
Yeah, right. Oh, I love the way you managed to transition to your holiday. You know, nobody cares about your holidays, Marcus.
No, I think that probably the opposite is the case. They probably...
Do you think that's why they tune in?
They hate the idea of me going on holiday and then blathering on about it, but, you know.
Doesn't mean you're going to stop doing it.
I'm feeling really relaxed and kind of, you know, easy with the world because of it.
But you're back and forth to America every 5 minutes at the moment as well, aren't you?
Seems that way, yeah. But starting off another project out there, Lee and I are heading off in 3 weeks, I think it is.
I haven't been to the States for ages. They've stopped asking me.
Well, it seems to go in, you know, it goes in circles, doesn't it? We've got loads of things on at the moment, and then we probably won't go for another 4 years.
Yeah.
And then there'll be loads of things.
Just the way it goes, isn't it?
It does mean that I'm accruing lots and lots of British Airways points, though.
Oh, which is always a bonus.
Well, it kind of had... I'm now a silver member, which means I can get into the lounges even with an economy ticket.
Oh, so that's good.
That is a good thing.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah. I've never made it as far as silver.
Yeah.
So. I'm a mere bronze member. You're obviously much more important than I am.
Yeah, well, we flew because I've been on so many holidays as well. It's a far-flung places, and it all adds up.
God, you just get right up my nose.
And all the listeners. Hi, yeah. I'm back.
And,
well, at least I turned up more than bloody Andy Clark did.
I know, right? So people have had to listen to an episode of me blathering on by myself, which probably was one of the best shows, let's be honest.
It was wonderful. And while after you've had a go at me, I edited both of those shows while I was on holiday.
You did do that. I will give you that. That was a bit above and beyond.
It was one of those things that I realised as I was editing the one before I left. I thought, who's going to edit this? Because they're quite complicated now. And I thought you probably could have done it, but you haven't got the right tools for it or anything. So it would have been a nightmare. So I was nice, Paul. And
okay.
I did it.
All right.
Then by the pool while, you know, with my sunnies on and a drink and a beer to the side.
Oh, I could do with a beer now. I've just discovered a new type of cider. It's such a girly drink, but I absolutely love it.
It's not one of these Swedish raspberry things, is it?
Not quite. Well, yes, basically. It's coconut and lime.
Oh, God. Mind you, I don't like cider. There are two things in it that I've realised that I spent years trying to like. And right. Cider is one of them. Cigars are another.
Okay.
And I realised about 5 years ago that I actually don't like either of them.
No.
But maybe, what was it? Coconut
and lime. Marmite. Wouldn't surprise me. The ciders are getting weirder and weirder.
Yeah. So where do you buy that? In the pub or is it a bottle?
No, it's at Tesco's. Okay. Brothers Cider. Ooh, they ought to send me free ones now.
There you go.
Or get a discount like I do off of trips to Barcelona for random people that ask. Any dear listener, if any of you want a free, you know, or cheap ticket to Barcelona, I'm sure, you know, just write to me. Apparently that's my job these days.
You know, just to make it worse, Paul,
what?
If I do come out to Barcelona in October to see you speak and others, I'm probably going to hire a car the day Ooh. After it finishes and drive to the south of Spain and have a long weekend in the villa again.
You get. And also, the other thing I found a bit insulting, the main reason I'm going out there is to do this workshop on convincing clients, right? Mm-hmm. Same one as I've been running online at the moment. Mm. And it's like, you wrote to me asking for this and you said, oh, I only want a discount for the conference, not the workshops, right? So basically, you're not even going to bother coming to my workshop, are you?
Probably not, no.
Or
it's because I'm going to be driving to southern Spain, Paul.
I could have taken that as being, that's because you're more than happy to pay full price for my excellent workshop. I should have thought that, shouldn't I, really?
If I wasn't driving to southern Spain, Paul, then that would be the case, yes.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You really are terrible. Anyway, enough of such things.
It's nice to be back chatting with you, Paul.
It's a good job, actually. It's a very good job that we've only got two talks on this show because we seem to have spent the first 10 minutes just ranting at one another, which you can't fit in. If there's three shows, we don't have time for that amount of ranting.
No, well, I didn't put last week's show, even with you and Andy trying to be quick, was still an hour and 11 minutes or something.
He doesn't shut up, Mike.
No, he doesn't. Oh, Australia's brilliant.
Yeah, nobody cares. I think now, to be honest, the line, what did the recording come out like? Because the line sounded awful.
No, it was all right.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was fine.
It's like, you're too far away. I mean, Australia's just too far away. And before you turn around, Mr. Australian convert Andy Clark and say, mm-hmm. well, Britain's too far. No, I'm sorry. Australia is nowhere is near Australia. There's no countries near Australia. You're just by yourself somewhere.
Yeah, there was a bit of a funny little echo going on, but it was all right. Okay. It was fine.
But anyway, so we've dropped down to two talks this week simply because the number of submissions has finally slowed up. So actually, even with two talks, we do in theory have some spaces left, which is great. And I can quite easily go up to three. So you still can submit a talk. You have no excuse.
Mm-hmm. I've been nagging all of the Headscape lot, and I think there might be one or two coming.
Oh, good. That'd be good. Because we've still got a couple of spaces to fill up if we just have two a week, and obviously we can go up to three easy enough. Yeah. But if you want to submit a talk, you can do so at boag.world/18. I'd like to get in as many as I can, mainly because it gives less time for Marcus to talk about his holidays. So
I'm not going on anymore.
Are you sure?
Apart from maybe the one after the conference.
Yeah, there we go. Immediately you got one. And then also, let's be honest, all your trips to America are big jollies, aren't they?
Oh, they're so not. They really are not.
Yeah.
They're the hardest I ever have to work in my life.
It's the most drunk I've ever seen you in your life.
You haven't seen me that often then, Paul.
Well, when we were in that steak restaurant where you ordered a steak and then it arrived and you couldn't eat it and you left.
What?
That was pretty bad. Don't you? Oh, you see, can't even remember.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, yes, I do remember that. Yes, that was because I went with Ed.
And, yeah, you know, who's
anyone
like
who
twice...
knows Ed?
Yeah,
you know he is the size of two men.
He is, and yeah, you so, can't drink.
And I tried
it,
to keep up and failed.
Yeah,
that was quite for a lie down.
It was quite pathetic. He's also half your age as well, which probably didn't help.
Yeah, he's but yeah, this is the policeman are getting younger thing. Ed's like well into his 30s now.
Well, you're well into your 60s, aren't you?
Oh, shut up.
Well, you are a granddad.
Who's got a big birthday next, Paul?
Yeah, that's years away.
It's fewer years away than my next big birthday.
Yeah,
so there.
Well, there you go. Anyway, I was going to talk about my latest obsession with search engine optimization, but I don't think we have time. Oh, no, you won't know now. You spent too long waffling. And I was going to recommend a useful app that people used and all kinds of things, but that'll have to wait till next week.
Oh, you're making your the avatar of yourself bounce up and down on my screen in front of me.
Hey? the notes, because I'm going between lines.
You're going up and down and up and down.
Yeah.
There we go.
Oh, that's fun, isn't it? That's a new game. Anyway, that means nothing to anyone else. Should we get on with what's left of the show?
Yes.
Right. Let's do a sponsor first, as we've only got two talks. Change the order a little bit. Now you're jumping around. Stop it, Marcus. Full Story, we're going to talk about first. So Full Story, everybody knows by now, I'm a great fan of this tool. It is by far the best analytics tool on the market. Although, bizarrely, I'm not currently running it on my website, which is a bit weird. I need to sort that out. I don't know what I did. I think I accidentally deleted them at some point, which is just me all over, isn't it? So they asked me last week to share my personal thoughts, and I didn't, because I just quoted someone from Slack channel who was far more interesting than me. But this week I am going to share what I personally think of it, which is, I think, very brave on their part. Well, no, it's not really. They know I like it. So I think the thing that I like most about, and I've been trying to think about how to put this, it's incredibly intuitive to use somehow. I don't know quite how to describe why it's really easy to use, but certainly compared to something like Google Analytics, which gives me a headache every time I open it, it's very easy to go in with a specific question and get an answer to that question. Which Google, let's be honest, Google Analytics isn't it?
Every time I go into Google Analytics and I think, how is it I find that thing?
Yeah.
Every time. So I just go, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which, if you've got a Chris, that works very well. Because that's even less work than going into Full Story. So what I think what we're saying, dear listener, is you've got a choice. You can either hire yourself a Chris, or you can use Full Story. That's about your only options there. And I would have thought a Chris is quite a lot more expensive than a Full Story. I don't know. Perhaps you can get discount Chris.
Possibly. I'll see, and I'll come back with prices next week.
Okay. So, so with Full Story, basically it's very intuitive, especially extra intuitive if you're like me and can write a bit of CSS, because you can go in. You don't need to be able to do this, because it's got a really good natural language search as well, where you can just type in what you want and it works it out. But I can go in and say, you know, okay, this particular button, which has got this class or, you know, is within this container or whatever else, give me all the information about that particular button. And you can just type it almost as CSS in there. And that is just flipping brilliant. And also, you don't need to go into your code and add event handlers or any of that kind of stuff. It's just recording everything. So, you know, as long as the code, you know, the JavaScript has been running on the site as a whole, you can get any information on any element, which is flipping brilliant. The other thing I really like about it is the other problem I've got with analytics is very good at telling you what is wrong with your site, right? Oh, people have all abandoned this page, for example. But it doesn't really tell you why it went wrong. Now, the advantage with Full Story is that you can click in and watch user sessions of people that have dropped out of that particular page or whatever else it is that went wrong, and actually see what they did. So it'll give you a much clearer idea of you know, finding out exactly what people did and what in and where things are going wrong on your site, which I think is hugely beneficial. So that's why I like Full Story anyway. You can sign up today and see if it provides the same cool results for you. If you like it as much as I do, it's completely no obligation. You can get a month of the pro account for free if you go to fullstory.com/Boag. No credit cards or anything like that. And you can continue after that month if you want to without even paying up to 1,000 user sessions a month. So there's really no reason not to give it a go and see if your experience is as good as mine. Cool. All right. So that's full story. Let's move on to our first talk, which is Remy Sharp. Do you know Remy, Marcus?
We've met yonks ago.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. I follow him on Twitter.
He's a smart chappy. Mm. So Remy is the founder and curator of FFConf, which according to him is the UK's best JavaScript and web conference. He has put an exclamation mark by that. I've not been, Remy, so therefore it can't be the best because I haven't been to it. That's all I'm saying. He also ran jQuery for Designers and co-authored Introducing HTML5 and runs a video course on the command line. Does that not sound like the dullest course in the world?
What to type into the command line?
Well, it's really one. It sounds like the dullest course in the world, but actually I've watched a little bit of it and Remy does make it not 100% boring. And the other thing with it is it's actually quite useful. Do you know what I mean? It's really hard to find good tutorials about kind of all that command line gubbins. So it's really good. But his jQuery for Designers was just a brilliant, you know, I absolutely love that. That's invaluable. Anyway, while he's not writing articles or speaking at conferences, he's got, he does his own development and training company in Brighton, but we'll forgive him for being in Brighton. Called Left Logic, and he's built loads of popular tools that you will have heard of, but I'm not going to bore you with all those now. Right, so that's enough praising Remy and saying how great he is. Let's hear what he's got to say.
Hello, my name is Remy Sharp, and I have been asked to give a talk about something that I'm passionate about. Now, as an Englishman, I'm more of a glass, pretty empty kind of person, and I struggle to find things that I truly believe that I'm passionate in. And I've been thinking about this long and hard. Like, what is it to be passionate about something, and is it kind of an absolute? And within the constraints of my work and working on the web, I've come to realize that the thing that I've been consistently passionate about without really kind of knowing about it, but the thing that I care the most about and have done for years now is a simplicity to be able to actually deliver something to the internet. Now that ranges from both my own work, but also having other people kind of enter the web, start coding. And I'm constantly looking for the simplest solution. Now, it doesn't have to be the simplest solution which costs us performance or experience or kind of the shortcut, half-baked. I want the simplest right solution. Now, when I think about this, this can range anything from kind of configuration, build tools, testing, deploying websites, building websites, what frameworks we use. And a few examples of that I've been kind of using lately, I just wanted to share with you today. So one of them, for instance, with respect to deploying, getting a website live, as time has gone on over the last decade or two, it's become easier and easier and easier. And I'm constantly looking for the simplest way to get a website live that doesn't cost, doesn't cost the farm. So when I started out on the web, the way that I would have to get a new server to be actually run a thing or a project or an idea is that I would literally have to phone my hosting provider. They would give us a quote. Maybe they could send us an email. But eventually I would have to send a fax. Now we could do that through email, which was, fine. We could send an email that would send a fax, which is kind of a weird thought. And then it would be about a 2-week lead time until I actually had a machine that I could SSH into. And this would be a physical machine that I was going into and I would have to configure myself. Skip forward now to tools like Heroku, which you can just do a git push to get it live. Products like DigitalOcean, I think, are amazing to be able to provision a new machine in a matter of minutes. And the thing that I really enjoy using today is Zeit. So Zeit has a platform called Now, and it's a command line, or it's a, you can use a GUI tool, like a little menu bar tool. And you just, you can take your website. Let's say it's just a static site for this for this example, and you can just run the command now, or you can drag the folder into your menu bar icon, and it will zip all of that file up for you, all those files up for you, and upload it into their hosting platform. I believe it's somewhere kind of West Coast, and it will give you a URL, it will give you SSL. And it'll just be running that. So inside of a minute, I'll have a live website, a static website. And I can do the same thing for Node projects or Docker files. And because I write a lot of JavaScript, for me, the attraction is being able to just, you know, create a Node project and type now. There's no DNS configuration. There's no messing around with buying SSL certificates. It's all automated, but it's automated through Let's Encrypt. But the renewal is automated. Everything is handled for me. So the workflow is incredibly simple. And I just get really frustrated when it's anything more than that. When maybe SSL doesn't renew automatically, or I have to remember to renew SSL. And then I have to go and Google kind of how do I... where do I put the certificate and what the workflow is, and it's just a headache that nobody wants. Now, kind of going from the deployment process down to kind of the development process, for a long time I've shied away from frameworks and big libraries. Now I use jQuery, that was kind of the early days. And perhaps kind of 12 months ago, I would be very, very close to the metal. I would limit the amount of framework I would use, limit the amount of jQuery I would use, or even if I needed it at all, and write very, very kind of, you know, air quotes, pure JavaScript. And that's changed a little bit in the last 6 months. I've changed my workflow, and I started looking at React just to try and, like, look at what I was missing out. And I you know, had a look at the other options, Ember and Polymer and Angular, and React kind of looked the most interesting to me. And really, the development experience was good, but the build process was painful. And I'm not very familiar with Webpack. I kind of knew a few bits about Grunt, and I did the thing, and I kind of wrote my grunt file and then forgot about it. Like, I don't want to ever remember that stuff. And I feel like Webpack's the same thing. And my React workflow has now evolved to using the Create React app. And I'm sure, you know, anyone coming to React new will have already discovered this, but this was a real eye-opener for me. And what the project has done is completely, not quite abstracted away, but it's just taken care of all of the configuration for you. It does. It has internally, it manages the Webpack configuration, and it can do hot module reloading, and it will recompile everything. It will start a web server for you. I just have to, you know, run create React app, give it directory, and it will just scaffold everything into there. And I run npm start or npm run dev maybe, and it's up and it's running, and it'll put me in development mode. So it's a little bit easier to debug. I can make file changes in Sublime or whatever I'm using, hit save, and that is automatically injected into the browser. And there's no configuration for me. And that's the real appeal. Zero configuration. You know, not having to learn some bespoke build system. Now, the build systems are amazing. They are truly amazing. The stuff that you can configure and do and optimize is great. But a lot of time, what I'm trying to do and what you might be trying to do is just get something running and see a thing, and, you know, average decent performance without kind of destroying the browser is fine. And now, in fact, Google I/O was just last week for me now, and the huge improvement I've seen is over the last year, we've been hearing more and more about progressive web apps. And now there are tools like Create React app will automatically make your app a progressive web app by default. You don't have to opt into it. You don't have to add any configuration. It's just a progressive web app by default. And that is that kind of simplifying, using the best technology out there, using the best options, and just making that workflow so much easier. So I realize I'm actually quite passionate about, for myself, simplifying that workflow, and for other people coming to the web and starting these this process new, or even, you know, even like me, who's been doing it for over 20 years, and kind of learning that it can be easier. There's less moving parts to worry about. There's certainly more moving parts, but you don't have to worry about them so much. Like, you know, it's like a car. You want to drive it and it wants to go fast and look cool, but you don't really care about, or you might not care about what injection system it's using. And heavens knows, I don't know what an injection system is, and I don't care how cool your, you know, your gulp file is, or how cool your Webpack file is. I just want the thing to work. And I don't want to have to learn some bespoke configuration to be able to do that. So that's what I'm looking for across my entire business and working experience. Simplification with the best tools and the best options available to me. So thanks for listening. Hopefully that's useful to some of you. And check me out on Twitter. I'm at Rem, and remyshop.com. I blog about some of this stuff as well. Thanks.
Cool. So that was Remy's talk. I'm really looking forward to hearing what Marcus has got to say. No doubt you've got lots of great insights into that.
JavaScript related ones. Yeah, absolutely. No, I took a little bit of offense to that when I saw your note on.
Why?
There.
Why? Did you understand anything that was said?
I understood the words he was using, most of them anyway.
I tell you, I'm not sure you did, because there were some great app names in there.
No, I didn't.
And I'd like to, excuse me, I just need to take a moment. I wish to make a public apology to my wife who transcribes this show. I am in no way responsible for all of the words that Remy chose to use in that. If you have trouble looking them up, don't come to me, because I've got no clue. So there you go. So she's got to transcribe that.
You are responsible though, Paul. you kind of effectively booked him. So,
well, no, because it's an open mic season. Although I did actually ask Remy to submit something, because I think he's cool. Yeah, so it is my fault.
I have to take umbrage with one of the things he said. I am an Englishman, therefore my glass is half empty.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
That's rubbish. Tusk.
No, it is the inherently British way. It's not my fault you're American at heart.
Oh, stabs me in the heart. But I did like his definition of passionate, because we've had this, you know, we had a whole series on passion, didn't we? Kind of a bit uptight about sort of like, oh, it's an overused thing. And I just think, he just said, well, it's just caring about stuff, isn't it? And I thought, well, that's it. That's it. You care about things so that you do them more. Mm. That's it.
Lovely definition. This whole thing about working efficiently and in the best way, it's something that I'm actually hugely into, but not so much obviously from the technical side of things, but more from like the team management and organizational side of things. So I could, even though it was probably more technical than I was comfortable with, I did very much agree with him. And also I don't get this whole debate about frameworks, right? Everybody goes, oh, frameworks are bad. Well, you shouldn't use frameworks. Okay, I can kind of see both sides of the argument. Yes, it is good to know what it is you're using and why it works and why it doesn't. But I think it's a done deal, isn't it? I'm surely the commercial benefits of speedy development is going to ultimately win out against kind of some purist argument that we should all be building stuff, you know, using binary or something.
The problem is with this, and Headscape's very own Dan Shearman wrote about this, it's when you get frameworks or technologies foisted upon you just because that's what we use.
Yes.
That kind of thing. Then even, and sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. You've got two choices at that point. You can either push back and say, are you sure? Why? Blah, blah, blah. If you want to do X, then maybe we should be using something else. But if they come back and say, no, we absolutely have to use that, then you have to, before you start working, understand between you and your client what the constraints of using that particular tool may bring.
Mm.
And that's it, really.
Mm. Because it's not unacceptable, you know, for a client, if they've got to support something and maintain it and develop it over the long term.
Yeah.
You know, it's not unacceptable for them to dictate what platform or framework or whatever is built on.
Mm. Yeah. That's it, really. There's an argument that, you know, frameworks bring extra sort of bloat and all that kind of thing, but it really does come down to just think about it before you do it.
Mm. It also, I think a lot of it depends on what the drivers are for the project. You know, talking about extra bloat and stuff matters massively when you're operating at, you know, really high scale, you know, high load sites and that kind of thing. But, you know, those kinds of companies can afford the extra development cost of doing it without that reliant on those kinds of things. But, you know, for the kind of the majority of us, doing normal work that normal humans do, I think the benefits of a good framework win every time, in my opinion. But then, what do I know? I'm not a developer, and neither are you. So really, us talking about this is a bit ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah. Although there was just some general stuff, like you just said, like some general stuff came out of this, and I'm nodding away when he's speaking about simplicity. I mean, everybody likes simplicity, and it's kind of like the first... It's certainly my first rule of good UX design, make it really simple so that it's not hard. But as I was writing that note down, it reminded me of a time when we were presenting some designs, or Lee was presenting some designs to a university client who shall remain nameless.
Mm-hmm.
And let me get this right. Basically, he was questioned, but it was to the most senior of the senior people within the university, all very somber and, you know, in a very sort of grand room. And he was questioned about, well, won't people, how will people understand what you're trying to get them to do without kind of indicating to them that this is the thing you want to make them do? And Lee turned around and said something along the lines of, well, you don't paint a steering wheel yellow just so people notice it's a steering wheel on a car. And apparently that got us fired from the job.
Really?
Yes. We had actually, the project had finished, but we haven't worked with them since. But that particular person has now...
moved on.
Is no longer there, so there's no longer a barrier. But yeah,
that's a classic example of, you know, pissing contest, isn't it? You would just, you know, he just I bet it was a he as well, wasn't it?
It was a he.
Yes, just expected you to roll over because he was the alpha male, and
yeah.
He didn't.
And Lee just. Yeah. I don't think he took the piss. He was just sort of trying to come up with an example of when you don't always need to do that.
No, and it was a good example. I totally agree with him.
Yes, this round thing in front of you makes the car steer. You don't need to have left and right on it. I think that's what he was trying to say.
Yeah. That's brilliant. I love it. Right. Well, that was Remy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on and look at our second sponsor before we get into Ian's talk. So our second sponsor is Teacup AdWords. Their whole thing is about making AdWords as effortless to use as possible. They've already got this suite of analytics tool which do exactly the same thing in analytics. They've taken a different approach to full story. They've built something on top of Google Analytics that makes Google Analytics simpler. And essentially what they've now done is the same thing with AdWords. They've built something on top of AdWords that make AdWords simpler. Because they reckon that something like 60% of small businesses end up wasting their Google Analytics budget on poor ad campaigns and keyword management. So it's kind of, you know, unless you're really an expert in this area, it's quite a hard thing to get right, to get real value out of your AdWords. So having an AdWords tool that kind of helps manage all of that stuff effectively and efficiently is really quite important, unless you've got people dedicated to this role. So TCUP's tool has got over 50 different optimization things that it does around your Google AdWords to avoid you ending up creating wasteful campaigns. It looks for the best opportunities on the best keywords. It prevents costly marketing mistakes and is constantly kind of optimizing your bids for the best results, which is very cool indeed. They're at the moment, they're in very early kind of beta stage of this. So they're still refining and improving the product. So you might think, why the hell are they advertising on the podcast? But it's because when they advertised with us before around Google Analytics or their analytics product, they got such good feedback from you guys that they wanted to basically open up a limited invitation to the tool to actually just get your feedback and involvement in it, really, and help get you guys to start helping them create and shape the product. So if that's something you fancy having a go at and getting involved with, then you can go to teacupanalytics.com/AdWords. So there you go. So I should have said with Remy earlier, I will forget this every time. If you want to find out more about Remy, you can go to remysharp.com, remysharp.com. Right, let's talk about Ian. If you want to find out about Ian Landsman, you can find out about him at ianlandsman.com. But I will tell you that he is the founder of Userscape in 2004. I was just like, Userscape, that sounds familiar. And then I just realized Headscape, yeah. He has all kinds of really interesting things that he's involved with. He launches a free NPS tool, so that's a Net Promoter Score survey tool, this summer at thermostat.io. So if you're interested in what he's got to say about Net Promoter Score, make a note of that URL, thermostat.io. Also, you can catch his podcast about bootstrapping software companies at bootstrapped.fm. So yeah, this is Ian talking about Net Promoter Score.
Hi there. This is Ian Landsman from Userscape. And today I'm going to talk about NPS surveying. So NPS is probably a term you've heard. It's kind of getting popular these days. And we're hearing a lot about it on Twitter and talks and conferences and so on. But I know a lot of people don't actually know what NPS surveys are or aren't really clear on what they're good for besides the basics. So I thought it'd be useful to come on Bogue World here and do a little lightning talk on what they are, why they're for you, and how you can use them. So let's just kick it off with who they're for and kind of what they do on an overview. NPS surveys are simple one-question surveys, and I'm sure you've gotten these in your email, and posts popped up to you online. These are going to be 0 through 10 rated surveys. So you get a question that's along the lines of, "Would you recommend product X to a friend or a colleague?" And a 0 to 10 scale. And this is, I'm not going to go on with this forever, the background, but basically this was invented 15 years ago or so. And a lot of research has been done on it. And it turns out that this one question and this specific scale has to be 0 to 10, not just 1 through 5, or there's a lot of other scales. Those aren't NPS surveys. But the specific scale does provide pretty accurate results. And that's one of the things I really like about NPS, is that it's an accurate enough system. So it's not designed to it's not your sales numbers. This doesn't have to be at that level. It's a tool that gives you an overview of how satisfied your customers are on an ongoing basis. And it's a very flexible tool. It's very easy to administer. It's very easy to understand the results of it. And this is what's really drawn me to it, because I've been lost down the metrics sinkhole 1,000 times. We're going to install Mixpanel and this tool and that tool, and we're going to have to get these tools all talking, and we're going to micro sort of capture every interaction on our whole website and across all these different, you know, parts of our websites, our lead generation tool to our website, to our CRM tool, to our store, so on and so forth, and trying to make that all work. And most of the time it never really works. So then A, that's all really complicated, hard to do. On the other side, on the surveying side, also complicated and hard to do are things like just big customer satisfaction surveys. So, you know, you've gotten those. Here's 20 questions with, you know, all different things trying to dig into your satisfaction level, which is can be useful from time to time to do those. But those aren't really good at giving you the ongoing feedback on a very regular basis from your customers, because you can't ask your customers, you know, every 3 months to, you know, take a 20-question survey. In most businesses, that's not going to work. So, so the NPS being one question, one click, very, very simple. They just give you the 0 to 10. You can ask that question every 3 months, every 6 months, and get that more continuous feedback into how you're doing. So the NPS score itself is just a single number that's generated, and it's very simple calculation. What it boils down to is the percentage of the responses that were from your promoters. Those are people who rated a 9 or a 10, minus the number of people who were detractors. Those are people who rated 0 through 6, which some people are surprised by that. So if you've given a 6 and you thought that was a middle of the road answer, you thought your service, you know, that the company's okay, 6 is actually considered a detractor. So you basically take the percentage of all of the total number of responses that are promoters, and you subtract the total percentage of the total that were detractors, and that gives you your score. So if everyone was a detractor, right, then that would be negative 100%, negative 100. If you had 50 promoters, if half the responses were promoters and half were detractors, then you'd be 0. And so it's very simple score. It's great to pass around in the organization, outside the organization. It's kind of a baseline. Everybody understands what it is. Now, you can't always directly compare across industries in a certain sense, because each industry is kind of different. But it does give you some sense if even across industries. And it's great because you can pass it around internally or even externally. Everyone has an understanding of what the NPS score is, even within your organization, to other groups within the organization, or if you're a consultant, to your customers and so on. They'll have, and it's great because you can pass it around inside your organization. You have this one number you can kind of focus on, when everybody can be on the same page with what that means, with very, you know, little training. It's not parsing through 20 question survey and all the answers to that, and having to kind of make heads or tails of those different questions. And what does that mean? Are there contradictions? Ultimately, what parts of it are even actionable? When most of the time, right, you're kind of just interested in, are you heading in the right direction? Are things improving? Are your customers happier? Or is it going the wrong direction? Are they getting less happy? Are things potentially problems? And so by having that one number that you can, the most important way I like to use it is just to compare to yourself, right? So this month we were at 20. Next month we're trying to get to 21 or 22. And next month after that, 23 or 24, right? How can we keep improving? And that in that way, you're just competing against yourself, and it's a relative number. And so it's just a nice, simple way to keep an eye on that ball. And what I think is important is that a lot of times when you get down these metric sinkholes of more complicated solutions to this general problem, and if those don't work out, what ends up happening is just kind of default to your sales numbers. Well, sales are improving, so that means things are okay, right? But very, very, very often, that's not the case at all. And NPS is a fantastic tool to have next to your sales numbers because it's simple to implement, easy to understand, and it can show you a lot of things that your sales numbers don't. So if you kind of think about it like an iceberg, your sales numbers are way up above the water, right at the top. And okay, things look good up there. Their sales, they're growing. But when you look down below the surface, that's where the trouble is going to be. And NPS can help you spot that trouble if it arises. Because in a lot of industries, you don't see the trouble in your sales numbers until the sales numbers go down. And at that point, you may be months or even years in a more enterprise scenario into the decisions that got you into trouble. And there's not going to be a quick way to fix that problem. So if you made some bad decisions and it took 6 months for that to shake out into your sales numbers and they start going down, you know, you're not going to be able to, in most cases, fix that right away and see that improvement the next month in your sales numbers. Instead, you know, you're going to be riding that out for months and months in that decline because you didn't realize it until it was too late, and it takes a long time for your changes to take effect and for the sales processes to move forward and customers to make decisions and all those kind of things. And you know, even more importantly, existing customers that you lost, you may simply not be able to replace them, right? Or at least not anytime soon. If you had a really solid customer that leaves, that was a significant customer, right, then you're not going to be able to just replace them even if you fix your bad decision. So that's all what we're trying to head off by using NPS to see into the future a little bit, see the problems that are below the surface, look for things like, okay, we changed our pricing structure and see how that goes with potential customers if you survey them, or trial users if you survey them. You could spot quickly that, oh, wow, trial happiness is, you know, the NPS score of the trial customers is way down after we made this pricing change. Or maybe it's after a feature change. Maybe you changed your onboarding. Maybe with your existing customers, you changed a policy, or again, you adjusted a feature, something like that, where, you know, they're not even necessarily complaining to you. They're just absorbing it and thinking, hey, maybe we need to look at other solutions. And that kind of kicks it off and you lose them 3, 4, 5 months down the line. So it's not something that is so egregious that they unsubscribe that day, but it takes, you know, a few months for that to happen. And in those few months, right, those sales look great, but actually you're in trouble because people are starting to look at other solutions. The other aspect of NPS I really like is most NPS survey tools, and I should know here that most of the time you'll want to use a dedicated NPS survey tool for this, only because they'll do the calculations for you, which the calculations are not hard, so you could absolutely do them manually, but that'll defeat a lot of the purpose of it, because having instantaneous access to the scores and getting email updates and things like that is kind of critical. And most of the other survey solutions, while you can, of course, do a 0 to 10 scale survey, they're not going to do anything with that number, so then you will have to manually, you know, do the calculation. So normally you'll want to use a dedicated NPS tool for this. So one of the things that most of the tools will do is they will have after the customer submits a score, they will have a feedback a box that just asks them why they chose that score. And you can normally adjust that question as you see fit as well. So that's another really important part, because while we don't want to make it a big, long survey, and we want to be fine if they just answer the score and leave it at that, giving them that one extra option to just an open-ended feedback box really gives us that extra bit of interaction, which is super, super important. And you know, we've definitely seen tons of insights ourselves through that feedback. And one of the reasons I think that's the case is there's kind of a tendency to once you get a customer through the sales process, right, that part, you're interacting with them very closely. You have yourself or your staff working with them. Once you get to the other side of that, there's a tendency to just, like, the customer's on their own. There's not sort of obvious points where you are explicitly trying to interact with them. And so the NPS surveying, if you can do it responsibly, I'll say, so you definitely don't want to over-survey, but if you can responsibly do the NPS surveys, then you're creating these additional touch points with the customer that can be used, you know, to strike up conversations. If they reach out with a question through that surveying process, you should obviously be responding to them. And even if it's not something that requires a response, you're just having another chance to interact with them, you know, 8 months into them being your customer instead of only that early interaction. And then usually, you know, very many times you have the early interaction around the sales process. You might have some support interactions, and then you'll have an interaction when they leave, maybe. And that's kind of it. So in a lot of businesses, that's what it looks like. So the NPS solution gives you a chance to reach out to the customers, strike up conversations, just in general, get their feedback at different points in their life cycle as a customer beyond just those kind of built-in spots where it exists in a lot of cases. The other nice part about NPS is it lets you know how to approach each customer, how to interact with them. It can give a lot of insights there because a customer who gives you a 10, that person, you want to be working with in a very different way from somebody who gives you a 3. The person who gives you a 10, like what they're saying in the NPS survey is that they would refer you. Now, that doesn't mean they do refer you, but it means they would refer you. Well, so if they're giving you a 10, that's the person you want to ask for a referral for, you know, could you tweet this? Could you, work with us on being a case study? Is there something maybe you want to do even special for your promoters, some kind of special program or some sort of discounts to your conference you run or whatever. These are your sort of fanatical customers and you want to encourage them further, right? Whereas somebody who gives you a 3, like you don't want to just blast that person with a, hey, will you refer us email or ask them to tweet to all their friends because they're unhappy with you. So that's not going to endear them to you. That person instead, right? That person is a person you know probably needs you to reach out and maybe they need more support. Maybe they need training. Maybe there was an incident that didn't get resolved to their satisfaction that you can now double back on and resolve. A lot of different reasons why somebody might be unhappy. But you don't want to have that conversation with those two very different customers in the same way. You want to have different conversations with those two customers. So NPS gives you that ability to do that. And kind of finally, one of the things, another sort of misconception about NPS is, you know, who it's for. So, you know, I'm assuming most of the people on this podcast or who listen to this podcast are, you know, fairly internet savvy people. And you might think NPS is more focused on software companies, technology companies even in general. And that certainly has been adopted there widely, but it's definitely not only for that. In fact, a lot of uses are all over every sort of industry. So NPS was actually originally really an enterprise tool that a lot of large companies used and still use, and they would commission these NPS surveys by phone. Like they literally call up their customers and say, hey, here's a question, 0 to 10 scale, and they'd have that conversation with the person, get the score or through a telephone call, and then aggregate that information. So this is used across airlines and telecom companies and energy companies and so on and so forth, all across pretty much every industry. Also, a lot of other really good uses for if you are involved in any kind of conferences. I used it myself for a conference. It was amazing. Just the feedback for the conference as a whole, the per speaker feedback and having that. It was really, really great. An interesting thing, just anecdotally on the conference front, is I kind of keep my own notes. I throw a conference and I kind of keep my own notes on the conference and different speakers and how I thought they did. And the MPS was a great tool to see if my impressions were valid and if they lined up with what the attendees thought. So it was really, really useful for that. I've talked to a lot of nonprofits that use it in different capacities for surveying their constituents or different stakeholders or around different events. So really a lot of uses for it. Anywhere where you have anything resembling a customer that you want to find out if they are happy with your product or your service, that's definitely a tool that you're going to want to have in your tool belt. So I just say thanks to Paul Boag for having me on, and good luck with your surveying.
Cool. So that was a great talk by Ian about the Net Promoter Score, which is something that I think a lot of us have heard, but not necessarily many of us have thought about how to apply it and how to use it. I presume this is one that you've come across before, Marcus, is it?
Well, I've heard of it, but I kind of felt like when I listened to these two talks, I kind of thought like I had less to say on this one than I did on the first one. But looking at the many notes that I wrote, maybe that's not true. But that was my initial reaction.
It's right.
Of course, I've heard of it, but it's not something that I've, you know, I'm not a marketer, so it's not something that I kind of surround myself with, I guess.
Yeah, except I actually think it's quite a good measurement to be tracking from a user experience point of view as well.
Yeah.
The reason being is one of the big problems I find with organizations is that they're very good at measuring kind of purely financial metrics, right? So, conversion rate, those kinds of things. But they're not so good at measuring user experience metrics, like time to complete task is one that I particularly like. And instead, they just kind of tend to open up Google Analytics, look at the dashboard and all those vanity metrics of bounce rates and kind of nod sagely like they know what's going on. And that's about it.
Yeah.
So having something that actually tangibly measures the customer's reaction to the experience that they're having is in my opinion a really good thing, and Net Promoter Score is one example. I mean, it's not perfect, don't get me wrong, it's, you know, there are limitations to it, but at least it begins to move management away from thinking purely financially in terms of the stuff they measure. Because if you measure just purely financially, what inevitably happens is that you make a lot of short-term gains, but at the the consequence of longer-term stuff. So for example, if you're measuring conversion rate, okay, how many people sign up for our newsletter, and that's all you're measuring, what you inevitably end up with is pop-up overlays, you know, bullying people into signing up a newsletter. And that does actually work. You know, you will see an increase in conversion, but you're also, what you're not measuring and you're not seeing is the number of people you alienate along the way of doing that kind of thing. And that's what a Net Promoter Score will help pick up on, which I think is good.
Connecting it to Remy's talk about simplicity, I like the simplicity of it. And I've also, I've had experience of dealing with large organizations who've got, you know, they're all different departments who are focusing on different things. They'll come together to kind of, you know, pull some systems together to try and do something. And then it gets forgotten about. Mm. And I think a part of that is, and you know, what you were saying about Google Analytics as well, it's complicated. So just having this score, single score, is something. And that Ian mentioned that you can just pass it around. I thought that was really good and really useful. Because I think a lot of people just sort of just get on with their everyday jobs and tend to ignore things after a while if it's not sort of pushed down their throat. One thing
No, I was just going to say the only danger with that, I think, is that with any metric, you have to take it with a pinch of salt and not obsess too much about it. Because when you start obsessing about, you know, we care about is raising the Net Promoter Score, then, you know, that's just as bad as all we care about is increasing conversion rate. It'll skew what you're doing and send it off in one particular direction, which can be damaging. So it's all about balance.
Well, that what you're saying there is what that's my next point.
Oh, right.
Fetishizing, that is a word, yes, isn't it? Fetishizing about this idea of we must improve year on year on year on year on year. We need to go be up 2% this year, up 3% the next year, up 4%, you know, this, or, you know, we were 1% lower this year, so doom and gloom, but actually that means that you were 10% ahead where you were 3 years ago. So it's just something that kind of annoys me a bit, this kind of we must do better. And, you know, what's wrong with providing just a continually good service, not an ever improving one? I know that you do need to kind of look to push forward, etc., and you don't want to stagnate, but I think sometimes it can be damaging to be just having this we must do better, when just providing a good service might not necessarily mean that.
And also, I think you hit something else that's really important there, is metrics are so easy to misinterpret or to approach from the wrong way. So you said there, you know, oh, okay, this last year you're down 1%, but if you take it over the last 3 years, you're up 10%.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like how you measure things and over what period of time can all make a difference as well. So, yeah, you need a nice kind of mix of metrics that you use to guide you, rather than being a stick to hit people over the head with when you fail to meet them.
Yeah.
The one thing that I did really like, which is his point about it's not enough just to collect the net promoter score. You need to actually do something with that data. And he talked about, you know, doing things special for those who are promoters or detractors, and actually putting in some extra effort to allow that to shape the experience that you give those people. I liked that a lot, of actually converting, instead of taking a net promoter score as an indication of how you're performing, to actually then tailor the experience to people that have expressed either a strong like or a strong dislike of what you're offering. I thought that was very sensible. I like that a lot.
Yeah. I guess my final point is slightly related to that. You still need to be careful, because I don't know anyone that likes to be contacted by companies to fill out forms, even if it's one question. Nobody likes that. No. So even if you're a 10, as he described, you might be pissing them off by contacting them.
Yeah.
So be careful, I guess.
Yeah. And again, it comes down to how often you contact them, how you contact them, whether it's via email, whether it's, you know, a thing on the website or whatever. Mm. Oh, it's all so complicated, isn't it?
Life's difficult, isn't it?
I know. Why bother? I think just, you know, I wouldn't bother with this web thing.
Go and have a peanut butter and banana cider.
Yes, that's what I need to do. I'm supposed to be writing a blog post at the moment for Smashing Magazine that is, you know, what I've learnt over 20 years of being in the industry or whatever. I can't remember, something like that.
Blimey.
What advice would I give to my younger self? That was it. And I think my advice is don't bother, really. Go and garden. Gardening's nice.
Gardening is nice. It's true, yes. More time in the fresh air.
Exactly. Get out. Get a life. You know, something like that. I don't know. Anyway, Marcus, do you have a joke for us?
I do. This one is from Chris Forrance. Did you hear about Agreeable Caesar?
No.
He came. He saw. He concurred.
Oh, dear. That's a good one. That was in the Slack channel, wasn't it? Now I recognise it.
It was in the Slack channel.
Where would we be without our Slack channel? That's been a saviour for you, isn't it?
It has been an absolute diamond thing. Thank you all for posting stuff in there.
If you want to join our Slack channel, it's not just jokes, although it is mainly. You can go to boagworld.com/slacking. But for now, goodbye, and we'll talk to you again next week. Bye.
Bye.